you have to go back a step farther if you want to criticize the Panthers for this, because once you make him the eighth overall pick in the draft, and once he comes in and has three really good seasons, along the way becomes only the third guy in NFL history to have 1,000 rushing yards and 1,000 receiving yards in the same season, you've already written the check.
Sports Radio FNC, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. That is the voice of Mike Florio from the Mac Attack this morning with Chris McClain and Willie P. I want to respond to that in 1 second. We got Gene Sapikoff, columnist for the Post and Courier, coming up at 11:20. Charminger Chach at 11:40. So the theory that I just heard, if I can distill it to its finest form, Stan, is the real problem was drafting Christian McCaffrey, because when he became a good player, you had to pay him. So don't draft good players, because one day you're going to have to pay them. Is that what I'm understanding? Mike Florio came on these very airwaves and talked about?
I think that was mostly his point. I think his inference was at that position. The moment you draft a running back,
mm-hmm.
and at that position he performs the way that Christian did, which I'll come to that in a second. You got to pay him. I go to this. We all celebrate the 1,000. It's historic, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Question. How many playoff games Christian McCaffrey been in? And I'm going to ask that rhetorically, because I've seen Derrick Henry in playoff games, and I've seen Zeke Elliott in a playoff game. And do you see where I'm going here?
Yeah, I also think, because I think a lot of people put this on Christian McCaffrey Alvin and the
Kamara,
injuries.
Yeah.
I don't put the Panthers' lack of success recently on Christian McCaffrey. I don't put the Panthers' issues with Christian McCaffrey on Christian McCaffrey. I put them solely on the Carolina Panthers. And this is not a specific Matt Rule, Scott Fitterer thing either. This is the Carolina Panthers with Christian McCaffrey have practiced, have had a malpractice. They should have a malpractice lawsuit against them for the way that they've treated Christian McCaffrey.
You're in litigation now.
I'm litigating this here on behalf of 10% of Christian McCaffrey's bank account, because they had him chase a meaningless stat box score for history, the 1,000 season after firing Ron Rivera, when they should have cut down his touches to minimal touches per game. And they did it all in, we're going to try and win some game with Perry Fuel, even though you lost all those games. So you had him stat chase and get up to 400 touches in a meaningless season. Then, coming off that, once he started getting dinged up, you continued to give him touches. Then this year, after having a lost season, the first three games of the season, the first two, 30 touches per game or more. Or sorry, 30 touches, then 29 touches. And then on a short week when he's dealing with a soft tissue injury, coming off of that 29-touch performance, you had him on pace to run for 30 touches again before he got hurt. So that is where I begin the indictment on the Carolina Panthers. Drafting running backs high, I personally wouldn't do it. I personally wouldn't give running backs a second contract.
It depends on where your program is.
Well, and that's fair. I think Mike Florio's framing the Christian McCaffrey selection disingenuously as well. All right, and this
To
what end? You drafted Christian McCaffrey when you drafted Christian McCaffrey because you didn't have any weapons. You had one weapon for Cam Newton, and that was Greg Olsen.
That's fair.
If you had known Cam's arm was about to fall off, you wouldn't have taken Christian McCaffrey. Well, if you had known that Patrick Mahomes was going to be Patrick friggin' Mahomes, you wouldn't have taken Christian McCaffrey, but you didn't. You were looking for ways to maximize Cam. That's why they took CMC with a top 8 pick. I'll stand by that selection at the time.
So here's what I would ask him. Before, you know my saying, all running backs run the same when there is no hole.
Mm-hmm.
And Christian McCaffrey's primary function is to run with the football. So we got to make sure he does that first. He can do all this other stuff, catch, be in the slot, return. He can do some other stuff too. But his primary responsibility must be running the ball. What was the condition of the offensive line and the defensive line at the moment that they chose McCaffrey? That's what I would have asked Dave Gettleman and eventually Marty Herney. Had you checked the appropriate boxes, quarterback check, did you have the other stuff locked up? And what was the depth behind those other two pieces?
So we're in similar ballparks here. You're talking about when he got drafted.
The moment you took him, what did it look like?
Since then. What did you do with the picks after Christian McCaffrey? Because you didn't put him on that offensive line. What did you do with the picks the year after you took Christian McCaffrey? Because you didn't put him on the offensive line. Right? The year after, you didn't put on the offensive line. I think a lot of the things that you can say about Cam Newton and how the Panthers failed Christian McCaffrey on a larger level. So this is Jerry Richardson, Marty Herney, Dave Gettleman, Dave Tepper, Matt doesn't really get Ron Rivera, all the offensive coordinators, all those things that you can say. Didn't give him a good enough offensive line, right? Didn't support him with enough weapons. Offensive system, usage, all those things you can say about Cam, you can say about Christian McCaffrey now. And the difference is, there are still people in that organization who saw what you did with Cam. And then we turned around and did the same thing with Christian McCaffrey. I'm not mad that Christian McCaffrey's gotten hurt. Injuries happen. I didn't think they had to pay him when they paid him. When they came out with that BS about, he's a weapon. Well, he's a weapon, you're giving 30 touches a game. That's going to catch up with you at some point. But I'm not mad at Christian McCaffrey for taking the contract. I'm not mad at him for getting injured. Injuries happen, and the player is always, Steve Smith said this on Monday, and I agree with it 100%. Guys like Christian McCaffrey, great players, are always going to want to play for the injuries. It's the same thing. It's literally the same conversation we had with Cam Newton. At some point, the organization has to protect the player. This organization, right, in how they've used him, in what they've surrounded him with, they never really supported Cam, and they really didn't support Christian McCaffrey either.
I come back to the Florio audio. It's, if you're going to take a running back high, you better make sure you have your support in place. I just made that. Here's the offensive line the year they drafted McCaffrey. I see Matt and Ryan Khalil. There's Norwell, who they were going to lose in free agency. Norwell was an all-pro that year. Trey Turner. Darrell Williams got hurt that year. Greg Van Roten and some other dudes. But primarily, that's what you got. There was Addison. We'll come back to that. Vernon Butler at some point. There's Charles Johnson, star. Kawan Short, Pep was on the roster. So the offensive, well, more so the defensive line was more attacked. I could poke some holes in that O-line. Taylor Moten was a young guy. Fine. It's not when you take him. It's what you pay him and when you pay him.
Mm-hmm.
They chose to pay him two seasons early because they wanted a marketing ploy.
Well, and it was they bought into the threat that he could hold out and that could stymie the beginning of the Matt Rhule era.
I'm going to bring back to something. And listen, my man in Dallas did the same thing. We went through that whole thing with Dak Prescott because Zeke chose to jump the line because he saw that at the end of the rainbow, it may not be enough money for him. So I'm not mad at running backs for trying to get your money, especially when you're productive, as soon as possible. I look at the organization and go, why did you capitulate to that when you didn't have to? The other part to that I go is, okay, since he's been on the roster, and arguably there are seasons he's been the best running back in the league. Was he injured in college? Yeah, he had some injuries in college too. So you don't get healthier when you get on Sundays. That's not how this is designed. So this was a calculated risk by the organization. I'm not mad at Christian. I think he's a good dude. Don't know him. Never met him. And he's a baller in the right circumstance. I look at the organization and go, you didn't have to do this. I disagree with Florio that you just don't take the back there.
Yeah, I think it's an oversimplification by Mike Florio. And I'll be honest, I think the whole thing of you don't pay running backs is an oversimplification too, because I don't think anyone was, even with his injury, I don't think anyone's saying that about Derrick Henry.
Right now, but to your point, Christian McCaffrey's the highest paid back in the league. Number two, Zeke Elliott. Everybody knows what that is. Alvin Kamara tied with Zeke, number two. This is per average. Dalvin Cook, 4. Derrick Henry, 5. Nick Chubb, 6. Aaron Jones, 7. All those dudes have something in common that McCaffrey didn't have. Been in playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's really unfair. I think a lot of people do that. The Panthers have not missed the playoffs because of Christian McCaffrey, paying Christian McCaffrey, or any of that.
Let's look at it the other way. Has Christian McCaffrey led the Panthers to the playoffs?
It's a running back.
If you get these other dudes run too.
Well, yeah, but those other guys, like Alvin Kamara, isn't the reason New Orleans is in the playoffs. I would have given that to Drew Brees. I would have given that to Sean Payton. I would have given it to, like, all of those guys that you just mentioned had ecosystems.
Derrick Henry, Dalvin Cook. Did Cleveland do anything like they're doing now before Nick Chubb showed up?
Well, but they also have Kareem Hunt. Well, but let's get back to the focal
point.
All of those places had better ecosystems.
They put a misvaluation on the player. That is the point.
No, but that's not why they haven't won. They haven't won because they have turned over the organization, because the organization, both organizations, Marty Herney and Ron Rivera, Marty Herney, Matt Rhule and Scott Fitterer, have not done a good enough job building good offensive lines. They've not played with a head coach who's been consistently. Like, there's plenty of reasons here. I don't put a lot of blame on the Panthers' lack of success with McCaffrey. As a matter of fact, I think their biggest problem with Christian McCaffrey is that they haven't used him the way they should, which is like Christian McCaffrey. But I'll be honest, even if they had, I still don't think they would have gone to the playoffs, because they still haven't. It's so funny how most of the problems with the Panthers can all be tied back to a few very specific things. A lot of the things we're talking about with Christian McCaffrey is the fact that they have not built a good offensive line. The fact that they have not ever used him properly. And let's also say this. Christian McCaffrey has played with Kyle Allen. This is a injured Cam Newton. Sam Darnold. Was Taylor Heinicke in there? Will Greer. Will Greer's in there. Teddy Bridgewater. I don't look at what has happened the last few years. I look at this as a organizational failure on where they are with Christian McCaffrey, because it is systemic of, like, if Christian McCaffrey was hurt right now, like in Tennessee, you've still got Tannehill. They still trust Mike Vrabel. They've still got a decent offensive line. It's not what it was when he first got there. But there are still enough pieces to say, all right, let's go be competitive without Derrick Henry. Here,
we just don't see this one the same way.
It's Christian McCaffrey or bust. No, that seems to be what Matt Rhule and company and Joe Brady seem to believe.
We're in agreement with what they seem to believe. I'm trying to address, and I'm morphing from where Florio is. Once you make this type of financial commitment to a player at this position, I'm not saying he shouldn't have gotten paid. What I'm saying is I would not have allowed Christian McCaffrey to hold me hostage. And I understand Christian is very well aware of the optics of what a holdout could look like. And I believe that's some of what's going on now. Like, I got to be mindful of the optics. And like, we never get true detail about his injuries. It's always this supposed and inferences. We never know. Is the hamstring torn? Is it not? What grade is it? Like, there's all this stuff. So anyway, they misvalued this particular player, and now it has impacted what they can do financially moving forward. Now, what they're going to do is what they did this year. They're going to restructure him, and they're going to start advancing him cash to bring his salary cap number down.
704-570-9610. Mike Florio says the problems for the Panthers began when they drafted Christian McCaffrey high because he ended up being a good football player. Where do you put the onus on this situation between the Panthers, Christian McCaffrey, after two injury-prone seasons? Is this more about the Panthers, or is this more about a player not delivering on his big contract? Gene Sapikoff, columnist for the Post and Courier, joins us next. Tells us who his most likely Final Four will be in college football on Sports Radio FNZ. Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. Charminger Chach coming up in just about 20 minutes here on the show. Get your submissions in now on the text line. But the big news in the last 24 hours, outside of the insanity of the college coaching carousel in the land of college football, was the college football playoff rankings, the penultimate rankings. That means second to last. All right, and I know because I looked it up on dictionary.com.
You just listen to me. I use the term all the time.
No, I wouldn't do that.
That's what we do at UVA.
Can you spell penultimate?
I can spell University of Virginia. you want to look that degree up?
No.
No student loans either.
With that being said, Michigan is number two. Yeah. Georgia remains number one. Alabama three. Cincinnati four. To go ahead and talk about his thoughts on the college football playoff selection committee's rankings, to talk about the most recent ACC head coach hire at Virginia Tech, and so much more. We welcome on of the columnist. He's a columnist for the Post and Courier, the great Gene Sapikoff. Gene, welcome to the show, sir.
Nick and Stan, let's talk about the penultimate last huge college football game that was in Charlotte, Clemson and Georgia. And, of course, the one that's coming up now is Pitt and Wake. And what I remember from that game, what stood out, the highlight, was Stan at your live remote location breaking down the outfits of the Georgia and the Clemson fans.
I can't believe it.
We can look forward to that on Saturday. But you know how crazy those Pitt and Wake fans can get.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a rowdy crowd. I mean, raucous environment.
I have said records. I will judge every Pitt Panther fan that I see on the streets of Charlotte here. Looking at those penultimate playoff rankings there, Gene, I know we still have this weekend to get through, but what do you think ends up? How do you think it shakes out? Who are the most likely Final Four for you?
Georgia, Michigan, Oklahoma State, Cincinnati. But very, very interesting guys, and maybe you've talked about this, what Gary Barta said last night in the question about the coach and Notre Dame situation for this week. That didn't apply, he said, which indicates to me that it will apply next week. And there is such a real chance that Notre Dame should end up in this thing. If, say, Georgia beats Alabama and Baylor beats Oklahoma State, I think Notre Dame's a deserving number four. But maybe they don't get in because they do not have Brian Kelly in that head coaching spot.
Let me throw another one at you, Gene. What if Luke Fickell is forced to make a decision on Notre Dame or Oklahoma before the playoff game, right? Or he would have to make that decision this week. So before the final rankings come out on Sunday afternoon, what if Fickell has to leave? Do you believe that would cost Cincinnati a top four spot?
Very possibly, Stan. And that's going to be a tough, tough decision because, you know, I mean, Cincinnati would be looking at not just one, but two games, extending into almost mid-January with his full attention. And I don't know if he can pull the trigger on that personally. That's going to be a much tougher deal than Brian Kelly. I mean, Cincinnati working so hard to get to this, but so many fascinating things. And you know what it all comes down to here. It comes down to the early signing date, December 15th. That has changed college football more than anybody thought that it would. That's why Brian Kelly has to leave right now, because recruiting, 1 week of recruiting is huge, and 1 month of recruiting can be program changing. So, I mean, that early signing date, maybe as much as the transfer portal and name, image, and likeness, I mean, I don't think we thought about that when they made that early signing date when it was, and now, guys, we are seeing how huge of an impact it is.
Gene Sapikoff, columnist for the Post and Courier. So the selection committee has told us that this could matter, Brian Kelly leaving Notre Dame for LSU before the decision on what four teams will actually be in. Do you think that's the way it should be?
No, I don't, because I think I would like to see them ignore that and just these teams. Obviously, the coach built the program. He manages week to week, but I think these teams will perform pretty well with or without the head coach in a given game. And, you know, especially if a new coach is hired, say, at Cincinnati right away, and maybe it's a in-house promotion, I don't think you should punish Cincinnati for that. And the same with Notre Dame. I mean, you move the offensive or defensive coordinators, both of whom themselves are mentioned for head coaching jobs all over the place, you know, into that spot. And I wouldn't punish either Notre Dame or Cincinnati. I think that would just be, you know, you're punishing not just the players, but the whole fan base and just such a buildup to something like this, especially in the case of the Bearcats.
And the reward for Cincinnati would get would be to face Georgia and get throttled. So I understand if they kept the four spot. I think Cincinnati needs to win and win convincingly this weekend over a ranked SMU team to try and get into that three spot, if at all possible. But I want to go to Michigan. The way that they decidedly handled Ohio State. We talk a lot about Bama, Georgia. We know what that's going to be, right? Nick Saban's going to get benefit of the doubt, we think. Georgia, that's an NFL defense by a lot of people's account. I don't go that far. My question is about Michigan. Can Harbaugh finally get this team to the college football playoff final?
I think he can, Stan, and here's why. I mean, I just think they're really balanced. They run the ball. They just blew Ohio State off the line, and I don't know that there's very many teams except Georgia that could handle that sort of onslaught from Michigan. And as far as getting past Iowa, I thought all season that Iowa's kind of a half a team, really good on defense, relied early on just a ridiculous amount of turnovers. And when that well was tapped, they were kind of exposed. So then can Michigan win a semifinal game? I think they probably can't. Unless they somehow wind up in a matchup with Alabama, which in this scenario, I don't think they would, because I think if Alabama gets in with two losses, which they probably wouldn't, but they could if some other things happen, that they're probably the four seed. And wow, there's just so much to look forward to this weekend, guys. But yeah, I like a Michigan-Georgia final right now.
Gene Shapokoff, columnist for the Post and Courier, with Nick and Stan, breaking down the playoff rankings. And since we last spoke, Lincoln Riley going from Oklahoma to USC for an insane amount of money. Brian Kelly leaving Notre Dame for LSU. Do you think that the seismic college coaching shifts that we've seen over the last week or so, do you think this could be the new norm in college football?
I really do, Nick, and I'll tell you what, you know, watch the trickle down still. There's going to be so much movement. You know, some guy at Kennesaw State is going to get a good job out of Brian Kelly leaving Notre Dame, because just all the movement that goes on in college football. And I do. I think that early signing date makes this urgency necessary. And then what I've talked about, and you guys probably have too over the last few seasons, the death of patience among college football administrators and fans. I mean, it's, you know, you used to say give him 3 or 4 years. Now it's 2 years, and we're going to have a serious evaluation of the guy.
Has the college football playoff put coaches, you mentioned earlier about the signing period and that being maybe what these coaches are doing, an unintended consequence. This college football playoff, has this made it where coaches have got to get to not just where they can get money, not just to a healthy program, but they got to get to somewhere where if I don't get a title, then I'm not considered one of the best coaches, or I'm not considered a good coach. Is that a stretch for you, or do you understand why Lincoln would leave a healthy situation to go to a healthy situation? Why Brian Kelly would leave a healthy situation to go? You understand where I'm going here?
Absolutely, Stan. I've talked about this for a long time, too. I think you have to look at what's the easiest path for you to a college football playoff berth, either in a 4-team or 8-team or 12-team scenario. And for Lincoln Riley, he clearly saw that Southern Cal via the Pac-12 was going to be easier than Oklahoma in the SEC. And I don't know that they'd be in the SEC West. I think the SEC will go to a pod system, but still, at some point, you have to be the SEC champion. That's brutal. And the same thing with Brian Kelly. Usually when a 60-year-old man goes and takes a different job, I kind of say, hey, that guy's already established his legacy. I don't know how much incentive he has. But Brian Kelly badly wants to win a national championship and knows that from LSU with that talent base, knowing that the last three coaches have won national titles, is just earlier than staying at Notre Dame and getting drubbed in semifinal or championship games in the playoffs.
Gene, looking at the coaching carousel, what it's led to here, we just saw Virginia Tech hire Penn State defensive coordinator Brent Pry. Do you think that is a good hire by Virginia Tech?
I give it a C. I don't know who else they looked at, but just here within the Palmetto State of South Carolina, guys that I like better than Pry would be offensive coordinator Tony Elliott at Clemson, defensive coordinator Brent Venables at Clemson, Jamie Chadwell, the head coach at Coastal Carolina, and yes, I think Shane Beamer, if they could have gotten him away from South Carolina, would do a heck of a job there. But I think Shane Beamer knows a lot better than to go and get in the shadow of his father. He, of all people, would realize that.
Do you believe at any point when this coaching carousel started up until now, do you think at any point Shane Beamer was contacted or considered making a move after 1 year, which wouldn't have been unprecedented?
I would think he would have to consider something like an Oklahoma offer. I mean, that is just too prestigious to not consider, and at least to let your agent let the University of South Carolina know that you're considering it so that you can get some sort of leverage out of that. And I've written this, you know, to be in the mix for something like that, whether he was or not at Virginia Tech or Oklahoma, is really good for your image, because the opposite of nobody wants you is not good.
Gene, looking and staying in the Palmetto State, Clemson ends up at 9-3 here. Chance to get to 10 wins with a bowl game. Do you think they've won enough here in the second half of the season to avoid any of the changes that were whispered and rumored about on the coaching staff, DJU's future, any of that kind of stuff that people were suggesting needed to happen for Clemson going forward? Can they avoid that, or have they avoided that?
A little bit of both. I don't think there's any coaching staff changes necessary. I mean, you saw the improvement in the offense down the line once they kind of got things together, and suddenly Tony Elliott, an offensive line coach, you know, Robbie Caldwell looked pretty smart against Wake Forest and against South Carolina, but they still need some help with, you know, talent to get back to the playoff contender level. And one of those things is a quarterback to at least challenge DJ Uiagalelei, and that very well may be the freshman coming in, Cade Klubnik from Westlake High School in Austin, Texas, same high school as Drew Brees, Nick Foles, and Sam Ellinger. I think they really think and want Cade Klubnik to challenge DJ Uiagalelei for the starting job starting in August.
Follow this man on the Twitter machine, at Sapikoff. He is columnist, college sports editor for the Charleston Post and Courier. And you can check out one of his most recent posts here on the ACC-SEC football rankings amid the great head coach shuffle. Great column there, Gene. Always appreciate your time. This will not be the penultimate time you appear on this program.
Thanks so much, Nick and Stan, for having me. I really appreciate it. Guys.
Good man, Gene Sapikoff there. I do think what he said there, I think that's the million-dollar question to Clemson. I would guess, knowing Dabo Swinney is as best you can know him here in Charlotte, I would guess that the biggest changes moving forward for Clemson are adding that competitiveness on the roster, unless Tony Elliott or Brent Venables get head coaching jobs elsewhere. Unless they want to leave.
Dabo better be worried about keeping his assistants. Brent Venables continues to be linked to Oklahoma. And Tony Elliott could probably go get his own program even now.
I like that we've gone from people saying, fire Tony Elliott or fire Brent Venables, to we got to keep him. And by the way, you're right. They never should have been fired. But I think it's interesting that Clemson fans have done a complete 180 on their own coaching staff. Because of a couple wins over some bad teams and one good win over Wake Forest there. Great stuff with Gene Sapikoff there. We've got plenty more to get to in college football. And that's where we're going to start, Charming or Chach. That's next on Sports Radio FNZ. Sports Radio FNZ, Nick and Stan here. We're about to get into Charming or Chach. Send in the actions you would like us to judge. Is either Charming or Chach, and we will bequeath our answers to you guys. But you can be the seventh caller right now, 704-570-9610, and you'll win a pair of tickets to the ACC championship game between Pitt and Wake this weekend here in Charlotte. Plenty of opportunities to come on today's show to win these tickets, so good luck from WFNZ. Stan, I'm going to start with just a blanket. I'm just giving you a name. And then I want you to grade Charming or Chach.
Off a name?
A name alone. Just body of work it. Brian Kelly, Charming or Chach?
Charming.
Show your work, please.
One of the top five coaches by winning percentage in all of college football right now.
Mm-hmm.
Extreme relative to the Power Five challenges, if you will. I know they're independent. Challenges at Notre Dame, academically, weather, geography, BCS, title game, two college football playoff appearances.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Kelly can coach.
So here's how I would choose to divvy this up. Brian Kelly, the results, the resume, charming. And it's weird to me that people try to say he isn't a good football coach.
That's absurd.
But Brian Kelly, the human being, super Chach.
I don't know the dude.
There is the way he left. There was a great story by Robert Saleh when the 49ers were, where basically Robert Saleh and Mike LaFleur, or Matt LaFleur, one of the LaFleurs, were grad assistants for Brian Kelly, and they were invited to his Christmas party.
Yeah.
They show up at his Christmas party only to find out that he expected them to work shoveling snow and parking cars.
Yeah.
That is,
they were
the
Hakeem and Simi from Coming to America.
That was the definition of Chach. I don't think he's a good person. I just, everything I've ever seen about him is he's an arrogant ass. but he's won a bunch of games. So the resume, charming. The person, I think we've just have a body of work to suggest he's a bit of a chotch. All right. I saw one mock draft this week. Itty Bitty Fitty put it in our DM thread that we use to generate topics for the show. Mock draft talk during the bye week, during week 13. Charming or chotch?
I'm sorry, give me that one more time.
Mock draft talk.
Oh.
During the bye week, week 13, with five games to go. Charming or chotch?
I'm going to say charming for two reasons. One, I love mock draft. How you feel about the coaching carousel is how I feel about the what is mock draft.
Uh-huh.
And two, if you're going to do it, the bye week is the time to do it to try and make us feel better about the bleep show that is the Carolina Panthers organization right now.
It's chotch. But it's not the actual act of the conversation is not chotch. But having to talk about it is chotch.
By the way, who did they have the Panthers taking?
Kenny Pickett, quarterback out of
Pittsburgh. Yeah.
Number 10th pick, by the way.
Buyer beware.
Which, by the way, chotch.
Buyer beware.
Chotch. Kenny Pickett with a second round or third round pick.
Okay, I'm with you.
We'll talk to which we don't have, but we can talk about that.
We don't have yet.
Well, yes, that's true.
You don't have yet.
That's Trader Scott is on the case. But Kenny Pickett with a 10th pick. I might have to go shirtless challenging Dave Tepper. Dave! Dave!
If you go Dave, man nip, and chest hair fully exposed.
Yeah. Me and Tepper are either fighting or he's buying me a yacht. Those are the two outcomes of aggressively challenging Dave Tepper while being shirtless here. All right. So the Pittsburgh Steelers, 500 football. Things have gone askew for them. And earlier this week, Chase Claypool, one of their young wide receivers, was asked what suggestions he would have for change. And here's what he had to say.
Hey, and Cam yesterday after the game talked about, you know, practices need to be better. And I understand at the pro level, there's only so much intensity that you guys can compete with at this time of year. But what can you guys do at practice, and what needs to get better at practice in order for the team to improve?
Yeah, I think, this is something I've said since I was in college. We never had it, but I think like maybe some music would help. But we have music in the warm-ups, and that's always fun. People are dancing, having fun. So I think maybe music would make practice a little more fun and a little more up-tempo. That's my one suggestion, but Coach T's been doing this a lot longer than I have. So
Chase Claypool's suggestion for the Steelers to turn things around is a little bit more fun at practice. Charming or chotch?
When the music is blaring at the practice, especially at this point in the season, it's monotonous. You're tired of doing pursuit drill. You're tired of doing individual. Like, you do the same stuff every day. And, like, every week is regimented. So adding some energy, guys moving around, joking a little bit, it can lighten the mood. Charming. The organization and the guy that has the big headset in Pittsburgh, who you're trying to essentially aim this at, that's just chotch. You just don't do that to Mike T.
I wish we could see Chase Claypool going, hey, coach, had some notes on some changes we could make. And I really think it'd be great if we could just get some Snoop and Dre, right? Maybe a little bit of Kanye.
Oh, no, you pay tribute to Young Dolph.
Yep.
You get Lil Baby.
Yeah.
And it'd be really cool. Get some Bobby Smyrna.
Could we get you on TikTok dancing with us?
That's a stretch.
And then the next thing would be Mike Tomlin picking the young man up by his haunches and throwing him out of the city of Pittsburgh.
Mike Tomlin would be like, just bring me your playbook. You can go listen to all the music you need to.
The best part is Mike Tomlin was asked about Chase, because this is absolutely media chotchery here, because the media then turned around and asked Mike Tomlin about that Chase Claypool idea.
Well, you know, Claypool plays wide out, and I'll let him do that. I'll formulate the practice approach, and I think that division of labor is probably appropriate.
Charming! I wish I could hate Mike Tomlin.
Mike T's a man.
But one, I'm way too afraid of him personally, and two, when he decides to be sarcastic, his sarcasm is so cutting, I'm in awe. Nick Wilson, professional smart aleck, is in awe. This is charming, the response by Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, I don't have an issue. He handled it appropriately. I'm a big fan of Mike Tomlin at the podium. He does his thing.
All right. So a friend of mine who shall remain nameless, it's Rachel from PhD Weight Loss. She's my team certified nutritionist. Mm. What up, Rach? She just got a puppy. and she named it after her favorite country artist, Morgan Wallen. So, naming your pet after someone, Charming or Chach?
Y'all know I'm kind of disqualified from the pet combo, so you might want to aim that at itty bitty. I don't have anything.
So you can't
on
have
this
an opinion on something that you don't partake in?
No, it just doesn't. It doesn't impact me like one way or another. I don't know the proper pet etiquette protocol. Like
yeah. Itty bitty fitty. You're a dog. What do you feel about this?
He is a dog or owns a dog? Yeah.
I am a dog, and I own dogs. That's Chach. Morgan Wallen does not. He's not reached the pinnacle of being named after himself.
So it's more that who she chose to name it after,
yes.
Not naming it after. Like I named my cat Cassius after Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Morgan Wallen hasn't reached that plateau yet.
I think it's an all or nothing situation. Because society is no longer a point where we have these like unilateral figures that everybody knows, right? Like Johnny Cash or even Taylor Swift. I saw somebody referred to her as like one of the last like all around everybody understands her cultural touchstones because of the way media is changing. Like, media is so much even more fragmented now and will continue to be so as we have our own silos of getting information. Good God, I just went down a rabbit hole I had no intention of doing. The point is, I don't think the famousness or how good somebody is in your own opinion should dictate whether they should name their pet after it. I think it's charming to name your pet after somebody you admire or somebody you like. From the text line, 732 number saying, talking Kenny Pickett hand size. Is that charming or Chach? He does have a little bit of hands. He got baby hands.
I'm not there. No. I'm down for some mock draft talk. I am not down for doing dudes measurables right now, and this is the first day of December.
So are you out on hand side season altogether?
No, I like when we break down guys and who is more blessed than others.
And more well-endowed from the hand standpoint.
I wasn't going to go with the optics. I mean, the picture. But no, that's Chach. We're not doing that right now.
Do you
now.
Think, like Matt Rhule and the scouting staff, like, is there a U-porn for hands, for quarterback hands?
No, it comes up. I used to be the guy that used to put the reports in so the coaches could see them when the scouts sent them in.
Swipe right on this one. Look at those tiny baby hands.
You do have coaches that come in there. What's that wingspan? What size shoe is that, Fleet? They get down to some of the most minute details about decisions.
So do players, like, send DMs instead of dropping D-picks in the DMs? Mm. Do you hit up Lincoln Riley with pictures of your wingspan?
Whatever it takes. If you're trying to get paid.
I can't hate hand size season. I really can't. Swipe
it is
right.
Fastly approaching.
All right. Baseball handing out 7-year, $170 million contracts before a lockout. Charming or Chach?
Charming. Get your money, player.
This is Chach.
To the kings out there that are worth $100 million. What did I just say? Javi Baez just got some bread? Good on you, Javi Baez.
That contract is Chach.
Good
Detroit is going to hate that contract about 81 games into the season.
And he has enough money to move to Southern California.
This is a good one. 704 number saying, Sam Darnold coming back to practice. Charming or Chach?
Charming. I never want to see a dude be hurt. And listen, believe it or not, I'm kind of an underdog. I cheer for an underdog. I would love nothing more for Sam to turn this thing around. So I'm okay with that.
The only reason it would be Chach is the threat that we have to watch Sam Darnold play quarterback again this year. At this point, though, I can't definitively say there won't become a point where I'm like, let's just put Sam back out there. There was a point where everyone in town was like, let's do this Will Grier thing.
Listen, Cam Newton knows. If we see Sam Darnold again, his career is over. You can't roll Sam back out there.
Also, from the text line, giving away tickets to Wake Forest against Pittsburgh for the ACC title. That's charming. That is very, very charming.
Charming because we like the people, Charlotte Sports Foundation.
I'm very excited for the ACC title game. And by Goma to the haters. By Goma to
the
haters. I'm gonna show up in the press box just deked out. All right? And I'm going to be cheering in the press box.
Dig, energy. And small picket ticket. A small ticket picket is just going to be picking you apart.
That was almost the end of the show.
You're going to watch the ACC title game over the Big Ten championship?
Yes.
Why?
Yes.
Not your boy.
That's Chach.
Let me ask you.
That's definitely Chach.
Let me ask you.
Yeah.
Who has the biggest deke energy in town? This guy. So, of course, I'll be watching the ACC title game. By Goma to you for suggesting otherwise. The $63 million question everybody in Carolina would like to know. Sports Radio FNC.